Hello, this is David Rovix with episode 20 of This Week with David Rovix, which is available on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and all the other usual places, as well as at davidrovix.com/thisweek. The so-called mainstream media that I keep tabs on seems to be mainly painting the Gilets Jaunes, or Yellow Vest movement in France, as little more than mindless rioting, anarchy, disorder, hidden Russian influence, and other bad things. The reason why they're painting this picture is because they're terrified. The reason they're terrified is because some of the more savvy among them are well aware that this kind of leaderless movement against unfair taxation, corruption, and austerity is exactly the kind of movement that rose up at the beginning of 1848 and led to the formation of the Second Republic in France and big changes in so many other countries too. They know that when those they are governing collectively realize that, fundamentally, their interests are not being represented by those that govern them, then governance becomes impossible. French authorities deployed 8,000 riot cops and unprecedented amounts of armor into the streets of Paris last weekend, but the Yellow Vest movement appears only to be growing, as well as spreading to neighboring countries. The leaderless movement in 1848 also spread throughout France and across national borders, until it enveloped all of Europe. Most of the monarchies in Europe at the time were at least temporarily overthrown by popular revolt, very much including in France, whose previous ruler had been a banker back then, too. The ripple effects of this pan-European popular revolt were felt around the world in different ways, with veterans of the revolts going on to lead further revolts in Australia and elsewhere. Despite all efforts to vilify the movement, despite the burning banks and charred remains of sports cars in central Paris, as people in yellow vests gather on highways throughout the country to shut it down for another day, all polls indicate the movement is overwhelmingly popular among the French public, unlike their very unpopular banker-turned-president, Macron. Disaffection with mainstream political parties, which have proven themselves unable to rise to the challenge of feeding their people throughout Europe and so much of the world, has given rise to the growth of parties both right and left who at least appear to be united in their opposition to austerity and their support for the interests of their working-class populations. But this movement is not led by any political party, and the movement's demands are fundamental in nature, never being just about Macron's latest regressive tax. That was only the catalyst that got this engine moving. Where the car is going is anybody's guess. Popular revolts are never neat. Uprisings are messy in nature. People who are being spat on by arrogant, elitist rulers, passing regressive taxes on the working class while removing taxes on the rich and then telling the rabble to tighten their belts to save the climate, will react in different ways, not all of them noble. But as one who has personally seen the extremes of the disparities in living standards between the ever more squeezed French working class and the global elite that flaunts their obscene wealth in places like central Paris, my only desire upon seeing those department stores burning is to find a sharp stick and a bag of marshmallows. If my wife were not currently 8.5 months pregnant, I'd be using my frequent flyer miles and taking my French-speaking daughter on a holiday trip to Paris next week. As it is, I'll just have to settle for getting regular updates from my friends who happen to be lucky enough to be living in France at this historic juncture.
The famine had affected many people, from Ireland to the shores of the Baltic Sea. The soaring cost of food meant it took most of your earnings, which meant the shutting down of much of industry. But no one knows for sure why the rebellion began, why it spread from state to state, when in the mountains and the plains, from Galway to Ukraine, came the rising of 1848. 1848. A pitchfork is no match for a rifle, but there's nothing that will give the king a fright, as when he looks out of the window and sees his castle burning in the night. But that's what happened in 50 different countries where landlords encountered such a fate. From Budapest to Sicily, life would never be the same after the rising of 1848. 1848. Marx and Engels wrote a book, spread as quickly as the flames, from which the feudal barons had to flee. From the workers in the cities, from the peasants in the towns, and even from the petty bourgeoisie.
united for a time by a common sense of purpose, to finally throw off the crushing weight of the dynastic rule of hereditary lords who ruled the Europe of 1848. 1848. Died before it all was over, and some say it all ended in defeat. But the landscape was transformed when serfdom was abolished, which is why we don't see history repeat. And the monarchs remembered when peasants with pitchforks came to burn down their estate. And most of them decided democracy was better than the rising of 1848. 1848. 1848.
48. I hope you've enjoyed another episode of This Week with David Rovics. If you like the podcast, please feel free to share it with folks and to post a review of it somewhere or other. I'm always interested in feedback and ideas for future episodes. Hope to see you in podcast land next week.